You have one unheard message.
Hi, I was calling Current, the influencer marketing platform, but I think I just got redirected to a bunch of people listening to a podcast. Well, anyways, I was calling Current because I was told they could help get my brand set up on TikTok Shop and even build out an affiliate program of content creators promoting my brand and even have those content creators go on live streams and promote my product there. Wow, I could really use Current. I also heard that the brands they work with are making millions in sales. I guess I'll just go to their website at current.tech.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money at
Menards. You get so many ideas. So on a Monday, you might get 10 opportunities that present themselves. And when I was first going in, I was thinking, oh, every idea sounded amazing. Like, whoa, that's...
Put it all.
Yeah, that's... Oh, my God. That's unbelievable. That's great. And then I quickly realized that it's not about the idea necessarily. It's about the people. Like, who's behind the idea? You're investing in that person to execute on that business. So, like, put the... what? Because a lot of the best ones that I've invested in are boring. Mm-hmm. Like, they don't excite me, but the people behind it are trusting that person. I believe in that person. Actually, the idea is a good idea, but I believe he can actually pull through this and do what he's saying if he has the right resources around him.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop, a mic drop, bag drop.
All right, guys, welcome back, EYL UK. This is a very, very special, iconic episode.
Trumpets, please. Yeah. Mike, cue the trumpets, please.
First of all, shout out to my guy, Suli, for making this possible.
Big man things.
Yes, yes. It's been a great resource for us. We've been getting a lot of love in London, a lot of hospitality. People are very, very welcoming people, and going out of their way to just, you know, add value. So thank you. We appreciate that. So Rio Ferdinand, is a legend in the sport of football. I was going to say soccer, but I'm going to be respectful for where we are.
Let's check our surroundings.
Yeah. Football with a U. So football, a lot of our listeners live in America. So I'll give an education. What we call soccer is the biggest sport in the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
by far. It's not the biggest sport in America, so a lot of Americans don't have a full appreciation of soccer or football. But every other continent, Africa, Asia, South America, Europe.
Definitely, yeah.
It reigns supreme.
Yeah.
And Rio, he's a legend. He played for Manchester United. I believe you were the captain of the England national team, right?
Mm-hmm.
Won the Premier League. You got to say that. Yeah. Boy, that's like, yo, I won the Super Bowl.
Yeah. But what's even more impressive is that he's transitioned to become a superstar entrepreneur.
Mm-hmm.
So we're actually in his facility right now, which he just told me the upstairs is his sports agency. And the downstairs where we are now is media company.
Yep.
And he's an angel investor.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real estate investor. He's a sports commentator.
Yes.
Anything else I'm missing? Great dad.
Great dad.
Yeah. I've got a foundation.
He's got a foundation.
He's important to me.
He is obviously on the media side. He's won awards for his documentary. He knows a little thing about cryptocurrency. Surprise.
NFTs. Crypto, not so much, but NFTs.
So,
a little bit.
First and foremost, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it.
No, you know what? When I got the call from Sully to come on, man, I was just like, he didn't have to introduce you guys. He sent me a couple of like YouTube clips and stuff. I was like, listen, I know these guys. Don't worry. So I've seen their stuff. So, it's a pleasure for me to get on.
Nah, I appreciate it. So
it's important what you guys do as well, I think, just to add.
Thank you.
So I think this is going to be a very interesting conversation because we can cover a lot of different stuff. But I want to start with sports because we do have a large listenership in America, and a lot of the sports guys listen to us. So like a lot of NFL players, NBA players, and I think the reason why they're so tapped in is because they need some level of guidance. Like, I don't know how it is here, but in the States, it's a statistic where like 70% of NFL players go bankrupt 5 years after they get finished playing, like 50% of NBA players, and they make millions of dollars. And people are like, well, how does this happen? Mm-hmm. So I understand in your career, you had made some mistakes when you were young, but then I think when you got to Man U, everything started to change, right? Is that correct? Or?
Yeah, I think, listen, people from, like us from our backgrounds, like financial literacy is just something that isn't there. Like even in education and curriculum, we don't get taught, like you get taught maths and you get taught English, you get taught science, but you don't get taught reality. Yeah, in school, I don't know what it's like in America, but we don't get taught real, like everyday financial literacy. We don't get taught about mortgages really. What the yield is, what rent means, what we don't get taught none of that stuff, like mm-hmm. insurance. Like, I bought my first car, I spent all the savings I had on the car, and then the man said, talk to me about insurance. And I said, pardon? I don't have insurance. I had money left.
So, didn't allocate for that.
Yeah, so like, it's crazy. And the stories are the same. The exact what you say about America happens here. And it's basically down to education. And that our parents weren't people that managed big amounts of money. Mm-hmm. So then the people that you look up to and look to for guidance, information, experience, they don't have it in that field. So you've got to then look further afield. But then you're caught up in this mad life that's going so quick. You're becoming a big superstar overnight. Loads of money on the table, invited to every event. Everybody loves you. And you're just like, I don't even know what to do. Mm. Don't know how, what, where. It's just crazy, man. Because it's so quick, that before you know it, you look in your bank account and you're looking and thinking, right, I'm meant to be, people think I'm a millionaire.
Yeah.
And I haven't really got any savings. I bought my mum and dad big houses. I've bought myself a big apartment somewhere. I've got more cars than I need. I've got every item of clothing that I need that's new out every single month. And I'm meant to be a millionaire, but I ain't got, if someone said to me, pull up £1 million now, I couldn't when you first start out. So, but people would say, oh, he could easily pull up £1 million easy. And you're sitting there thinking, right, if you only knew.
Right.
And you're embarrassed. And then it's hard to then talk to people and then let people know that you're in that situation. So it's very difficult. So I understand them stories 100%.
Yeah, it sounds exactly about like the athletes where we're from. So was there a person at United or maybe prior to that who you saw and said, you know what, that person's doing it the right way. Can you mentor me? Can you help me? Or are these just growing pains that you had to learn and then you kind of got the experience from the lessons you learned?
Yeah, you learn from experience. Mm-hmm. That's the way I learned from experience. And you know what as well? You learn from what you see as well. So now we're able to see so much more on social media, which will help educate. That's why what you guys are doing is so important, because there'll be loads of athletes around the world, not just athletes, but people in general, looking at what you guys are doing and going, oh, actually, there is a way and a right way and a wrong way, and I see both and I can work it out for myself based on the information that I'm getting. Mm-hmm. Whereas before social media, it's just try and test, trial, error. And it's, some people don't get back from them errors.
So is that the reason why you started the sports agency?
Yeah, one of the reasons. Also because I just felt that there was a better way to manage players. A lot of the time you see agents and you hear a lot of the horror stories where players aren't getting all the level of information that they need. There's no transparency. There's no real clarity with situations, and you kind of go into a deal almost feeling and going, I don't even really know if this is the right deal. Mm-hmm. Because I don't know everything. And I didn't want that for the people that I'm going to be involved with. And I thought, you know what, let me just try and build something that would be that and it would kind of take away a lot of the questions that I had as an athlete, but a lot of the questions mainly that I see from a lot of people that I played with. Because you ask someone a question a lot of the time when I was growing up playing, what other teams did you have come for you? And I've already heard on the grapevine or through other people that they had maybe 6 or 7 teams that wanted to take them. Oh, there was only one other club. And then you realize, okay, that was just the agents actually placed him where it benefited him rather than the player. Mm-hmm. Mm. And that happens, like, that's just one example. There's loads of different examples, and not knowing the financial implications of certain things that go on, and all of a sudden getting a knock on the door from the tax man, actually, that you've got to pay that. No, I thought that was my agent and I had to pay. No, you got to pay. How come you didn't tell me? I did tell you. Because your life's going so fast, you just get caught up and you go, actually, I've got the money, I'll just pay it.
Yeah.
But so these type of things happen all the time, and I wanted to create a safe place for an athlete to be able to come and go, you know what, I know when I go to sleep, or when the parents go to sleep of this athlete, they know that they're sitting there and going, I'm completely comfortable that these guys will go out and fight for my child or fight for me as an athlete with that big corporate company or with that big football club, to make sure they get the best deal for me, not for them.
So how is it being in your position as one of the greatest players in the country's ever seen to actually trying to get clients? Does it become easier? Because one of the things you said earlier is, like, for people, for where I'm from, obviously if there's people who are in these environments and they look at you as the guy who made it out, does it become an easier process for you to get clients, or are you still fighting an uphill battle? Because I guess you went from player to now this form, and there's people who are experiencing saying, no, I know more than him, even though he's just an athlete.
You're always going to have fights. You're always going to have, not fight, but you're always going to have competitors. And the thing that the old school would probably lean on is the experience that they have. Mm-hmm. But that experience is different to my experience. I've got experience being the player, so I understand it from the player's perspective so that I can actually try and give them the best situation that suits them based on what I've gone through. But listen, some people are going to pay people to be with them. So there's always going to be obstacles, but I just believe in transparency. I think I always look at it from a parent's point of view as well, and an athlete. Do I trust this guy? Do I really trust this guy to get me the best deal for me? Or is he going to, at some point, am I going to think he might go and do a deal that's going to suit him over me? And when you get to the bottom of that question, I have confidence that will normally come back around to me as being the right person to look after your child or look after you as an athlete. And as I said, you want to work with clean-hearted people. You want to work with people that also be confident in the fact that I want to be a success still. Like, I've had a career which has been great for me, but I still want to be successful again. Yeah. Like, I have that drive and determination every day to better myself, and me being better means you're going to get a better deal. You're going to get a better service who's working with me, 100%.
So it's like the new challenge. I was great in this aspect. Can I be as great in this one?
Bro, that's it. That's it for me. Like, if I in 20 years, 30 years, however long I'm going to live, maybe long, hopefully longer, finish off and retire, and people are still going, the first thing they say, that's Rio Ferdinand, played football for Man United and for this and that. Would I lie if I said I'd be disappointed in that? No, I'll be disappointed, I'll be honest. I need something else that stands up alongside that, at least. The people go, that's, you know, he's part of that, or he helped create that, or that's my drive, and that's why I get out of bed, that's why I work so hard, that's why my kids sometimes will say, I know they're thinking, yeah, Dad, he works a lot, man. But they need to see that example. But also, I have to have that passion in me to be able to produce something else. That's why trying to create different businesses is a big part of my life. I love it.
When did you get into the entrepreneurial space? While you were still playing or after you retired?
No, when I was playing. Because I just always thought that when I retire, your name kind of fades quick. Like, I've got traction now as a player. I need to utilize that, albeit after I got to a point where I was experienced enough to be able to juggle both. Like, I don't like seeing really when there's young kids doing it when they haven't really mastered their craft. Mm. I find it hard to believe that you can do both. There may be that guy who can, but I think it's a big challenge because there's so much to consider when you're a young player, just finding your feet in that sport. To be able to then take your focus off of that completely and really put big energy somewhere else, I think is difficult. But once I got to a position where I knew what I needed to do every day to be the best athlete, I felt very comfortable in then exploring other avenues and other ways of building stuff or being part of different businesses. And to be honest with you, Man United weren't happy. They didn't like it.
They didn't like it?
No, because I understand it. Like, I'm an asset. They've paid millions of pounds for. They pay me good money as a wage. Why is my focus not 100% there? I get that, but for me to be the best athlete I could be at that time, I needed to have the ability to spread my wings a little bit and sometimes take my mind off of football.
Yeah.
And what better way to do it than to do business?
Everyone has an opinion when it comes to the foods we eat. This food's good for you. This one's bad for you. This diet works best. But who actually has the right answer? You don't need rules to lose weight. You just need proper information to build smarter, more sustainable habits. Noom is here to change the way we view food by not only looking at what we eat, but also how we eat. Instead of making you feel guilt, Noom empowers you to keep going. Not everyone wants to be on a strict diet, do 5 days a week at the gym, or have daily smoothies and questionable teas. Noom uses a psychology-based approach to find healthier balance that's more suitable for your life and, as a result, more sustainable. Look, Noom has already influenced the way I shop for food, which has not only saved me money, it's also given me a clearer understanding of the foods I'm consuming, which has made me sharper and more energetic. You have to try it out. Look, there are no food restrictions in the program, which makes the process more flexible for your lifestyle. Everybody's journey is different. Noom believes in progress, not perfection. 75% of Noom users finish the program, and more than 60% of users engage with the program, keep the weight off for a year or even more. With Noom, all you need is a daily 10-minute check-in. No grueling early mornings or huge chunks out of your day. Are you ready to start building better habits for healthier, long-term results? Sign up for a Noom trial at Noom.com/leisure. That's Noom.com/leisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
I think that it's like a double-edged sword, though, right? Because if you're actually creating a brand for yourself and you're playing for the team, the bigger you get, they still will remember that, like you said, for now, that's he's from Man U, right? So it actually helps their brand too.
Yeah.
It's kind of interesting that they didn't really see
that's
it that
what
way.
I tried to tell them. Like, me being like, I created this magazine called Five. It's now evolved into like a YouTube channel and stuff like that, my football community. But this was like, when was it? Like 12 years ago, something like that. It's like a digital online magazine, like one of the first ones, won loads of awards on the Apple Store and stuff. But it was like kind of marrying up football and lifestyle and culture, fashion and music. So the first interview was with like 50 Cent. LeBron was on there. We spoke to Drake before he blew. Roger Federer, like big, massive sports stars, entertainment from the entertainment world, music and film and stuff. And the club was saying to me, what's going on? Why are you doing this? And I'm saying, guys, you don't get these type of stars marrying up with the Man United brand. Like, this is only enhancing what you're doing. This is bringing more eyeballs because people will look at me talking to these guys and go, where's he from? Oh, he's playing for Man United. He's more fans. But that was before that cross-pollinating of audiences is now a thing. It wasn't a thing back then, and no one could see it.
Because that could, I mean, thinking about that, you said 50 and Drake, you said LeBron, like that might have introduced him into this space, and now he's an investor in Arsenal.
Yeah, yes.
Which he could have been, perhaps, for Man U.
Well, Drake told me that he was a Man United fan. He came in all Man United drip. He had all Man United tracksuit and everything, and then about a month later, I saw him at Chelsea. And then after that, I see him somewhere else, and I was like, bro, are you a Man United fan, die hard or not? But so Drake, tell us, man, you Man United or not? We need to know, man.
Put him on the spot.
But
whatever's hot.
But like cross-pollinating audiences is a thing. You grow an audience. That's the only way you grow an audience. Like huge is like speaking to different people in different industries to help bring their numbers to you. And that's what I was trying to do at the time. But listen, we'll go at different speeds.
So as far as the media company you're talking about, the Five, can you expand upon that? Like where it started and where it is today?
Well, we had the football agency, which was great and doing well, but we wanted to kind of have like a 360 approach where we could kind of manage the outside interests and the commercial elements that the players come with. And like if we have players who want to expose themselves in different industries and do different things, then we wanted to be able to control that inside, because that just was like, if we're going to outsource all the media stuff that we do or commercial opportunities that we're going to get for the players, someone else is controlling almost the image and the destiny of a player that's under our umbrella, and I just didn't feel comfortable with that because their narrative they're trying to write just might not fit with how we see it. Mm-hmm. So to bring that control, we set this company up to be able to play a part in doing that. So not just for our own players, but we do it for players who are at other companies as well. We'll have treatments and ideas, then we'll go to other players, bring them in. Other companies will come to us and say, like, do a consulting role where we have this project. Can you go and get the talent for us? So we do a little bit of everything in that sense. Yeah, it's exciting.
It sounds like what we have as the Players Tribune. Yeah. Where it's like you get to hear directly from the athletes, so no one gets to shape their narrative.
Yeah.
And then obviously that brings more attention to it because it's like, oh, we didn't know that about the player. Mm. Now we can say, all right, well, we'd want to do business with them. Mm. We hadn't known that before, especially like in our version of football, where you don't really hear, if you're not a superstar, especially in the NFL, we don't see you, number one, because you have a helmet on. And then most of the time we don't hear your voice you're not the quarterback. Sorry. And so that those type of outlets give a voice to the athlete.
But I Am Athlete now.
I Am Athlete is another one.
Killing it. I love this show.
Shout out to Brandon Marshall. Yeah. We were just with him a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, I like that.
And
guy.
It also sounds like another athlete that's doing a sports agency and a media company. LeBron. At the Saints. Yep.
Shout out Mav Carter. Good guy.
Yeah.
He's come to the UK a couple of times.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Yeah. So, you know, they got the sports agency arm with Rich Paul,
mm-hmm.
and Clutch Sports. And then they got Spring Hill,
mm-hmm.
which is the media company. So like the barbershop, stuff like that, where they bring athletes in and they have like conversations, stuff like that. Uninterrupted. Yeah.
What's his name doing it as well? Durant.
Yep.
He has the boardroom.
What's
his partner? I forgot his partner.
It's actually Rich Kleiman. It's his agent. Kleiman. His agent is his partner.
Yeah. But it's needed because I feel like for a long time, athletes was just... Well, there's always.
But you know what? Sorry, to interrupt. Why do you think all these big athletes in the game now go with Rich Paul and Clutch?
They can relate. It's relatable
because they trust LeBron.
Yeah.
They trust LeBron. LeBron's got an image to protect. Mm. Like he isn't going to lowball or do something that's just going to be crazy out there that's going to affect this young talent that comes in the door because he's got an image and a brand to protect.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of these other agents who. Behind that curtain that you don't see their face, so they can afford to do mad moves and do mad stuff,
mm-hmm.
knowing that, listen, if something comes out negative about me or this come, you don't see me, no one knows me, got no image to protect, and that
he's still going to the supermarket,
and they never actually participated in the culture of the sport or anything like that. It's kind of like Michael Jordan and Brand Jordan, like that's how he's able to sign because they all looked up to Michael Jordan their whole life. So who's not going to sign to Team Jordan?
And the LeBron piece is that we're actually watching it happen live.
Oh, sick.
And so they look at it. Now it's more than an athlete. Mm. That's their tag phrase, but it is more than an athlete. He's in Space Jam. He has the movie production.
Mm.
These guys are looking at it like, I want to do that too. And
whatever he's doing, he's bringing them. That opens the door for everyone to come under after. That's the whole ethos of what we do. Like I've done documentaries. I've been involved in making different types of films. I've been involved in with 50 actually one of the films. Even like there's so many other with fashion and whatnot. Like them doors have been opened, and like that's why I always think if you're at a certain level, you've got leverage. You've got to use that to help impact other people. And that's what that's the only thing I try and do is that if I've opened a door that's been very hard to get through for people before me and I've managed to open that door, why am I going to close that door behind me? I want to leave it open for someone else who looks like me, who's from a background like me. People that come from our type of backgrounds, they need to come through that door with me, but someone's got to open it.
Mm.
What'd you do with 50?
We done a film. What was it called? Dead Man Running.
Okay.
Didn't do that well, man. but 50 weren't sharp then. His acting weren't that sharp. No, I'm joking. But you know what I liked about him? You could see the energy, man. The energy this guy had. It was like, it's inspiring because like he's just, again, the background he's come from, the hunger which he shows constantly, the way he's reinvented himself again in a different industry again. He conquered music in one way. Now he's conquering that, making series like he is. On different networks, and like he's basically made a network almost.
Yeah.
So it's just like crazy to think that somebody who came out in the club has gone and done that. It's like,
yeah. So let me ask you this: you seem like everything you do is very strategic. You're also a sports commentator. What was the idea with being a sports commentator? Was that done to further your brand, or you just felt that was something that would be a good way to? You know, keep your name going, or you just genuinely just enjoy it? Like, what's it?
First of all, I just love football. Mm. So it was just a natural progression to be in the game. I really wanted to be a manager when I was playing, but then life circumstances changed. And so I had to kind of just put that to one side and take that away out of the equation. So being a football pundit commentator was, I'd be doing that in my house with my friends anyway. Mm. I'd be in the bar with my, or the pub with my friends talking about the game. So why not go to the games? Why not be paid for it? And still keep your name relevant within the sport that you love. And I think it helps also with the business. The businesses that I've got, it supports that as well. Mm-hmm. You can almost be part of narratives that are coming out in the game. And the game's given me so much. Why would I just walk away?
Okay. Do you ever have to call a game that your client is playing in?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Also friends.
All your friends.
Like, because a lot of my friends or people, or a lot of the players now that are playing, I've either played against or with. And that can be...
I can imagine, because like we know like guys like Stephen A.
Yeah.
But he's not, he doesn't have an agency where his player's playing. Like, it's in your best interest.
Shannon Sharp,
yeah, another guy, that, right? Yeah. But they're not agents, right? Like you are, and your client is on the field, on the pitch. You like that?
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously it's in the best interest to have them perform well. You don't want a negative connotation around them. So how do you manage that?
I think... I base my relationship with the players that we manage on honesty. So I'm not going to say anything on the TV that I would not say to their face or haven't said to their face with the same type of energy. And I think the players have always appreciated that. Now, if a player plays really well, I'm not going to go crazy about it. I'm not going to go overboard. Mm-hmm. I'll be the same as which I'd be with a player who I don't manage. But likewise, if a player plays poorly or makes a big mistake, I'm not going to go overboard and go crazy about it. Like, I wouldn't go with any other player. I'll just state the obvious and the fact, listen, he's made a mistake. He's going to want to learn from that and you move on. But I won't be sitting there giving them favours and trying to talk them up I wouldn't be looking to talk them up above their station because you got to keep some type of integrity.
So let's talk about real estate. You are a real estate investor, right? Mm. When did you get turned on to, like, how did that start as far as your real estate career?
Too late for my liking. You know what? I've been lucky that I've met some good people. Earlier in my career, I got stung a lot with properties and I was buying stuff kind of off plan, not looking at the paperwork, not looking at the small print. And then all of a sudden, a year or two down the line, when it's actually not what it said it was going to be, or the yield isn't what it said it was going to be. Learning by mistakes. And then I met some good people who were developers, people who were getting to know about certain things in the industry more, like in terms of pace, quicker, and getting to the punch earlier. And then you just start to build, and you build up your own portfolio. And it's more about, for me, just having that mix of different types of property, commercial, residential, not all in one place. Like, I used to think, I'll buy loads in this one area. And it's like, if that area tanks, you are banging trouble. Mm-hmm. So like, it's just diversifying the portfolio the right way and just having the right people around you. And I think that's a lot of the way a lot of the players fall down, is that we end up employing the wrong people who look like they know everything, but actually don't have your best interests at heart. And like, I always go back to this with the management or with people I do businesses. Do I trust this guy? Because you've got to go with the gut feeling. Because normally I've always felt that the people that I weren't sure about and had a bad gut feeling about at the beginning, they always end up turning sour. Mm. So now I don't mess about with that. Once I get that feeling, whether I like them or not, I just say, business-wise, we can go for a drink or dinner or whatever, but business, let's just leave it and keep it moving, something else.
Yeah. Majority of the portfolio is invested in the UK? Or the other countries?
Yeah, I got burnt when I invested in, I don't want to name the countries because it's crazy, but I invested in the country and like put money down. Loads of people that I know put money down, and then the rules in the country changed and we lost a good bit of money. So that just burnt me and I ain't going to get burnt again.
Yeah, is it like multifamily homes? Is it flats? Is it commercial buildings?
Commercial that you rent out, yeah, which you get good tenants in, which has been good. They yield decent money, but it's long-term leaseholders, which are great. But also the residentials, like you buy you kind of get your yield off of them with rent. But also I think as well, like social housing was a good thing for me, big thing for me.
What's that social housing?
Do you have that in America, the social housing?
The public housing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like subsidized renting and things
Like that? Yeah, yeah, yeah. So you do different stuff and you can work with governments and you can work with local councils. And just giving people an opportunity to get on the property ladder at a lower rate. Obviously, it's good for because it's long-term leases as well and long-term stuff that you do with the councils, but you're trying to help people as well, which in the end helps you as well as a business. Yeah, but I don't think there's any better way to do business than help someone else, help yourself as well, in terms of just from a pure business standpoint.
Yeah, we were just talking. We just had an episode about that in states, like it's called like government housing, and they get vouchers. And that's one good thing about having that is that you don't have to worry about the rent being paid because the government's paying the rent. So it's good for landlords as long as you know you have a selection process in place. So so you're doing all of this stuff, and we didn't even talk about the NFTs and all that. How are you managing everything? Because being a sports commentator can be like a full-time gig within itself. And then you got the media side, you're a real estate investor, you're a family man, you got the sports agency. How are you managing all of this at the same time?
I don't know, man. I got a PA in it. So without a PA and a wife, I'll be under this table. Because it is a lot to do. But when you're passionate about stuff, it doesn't seem like a lot. That's what I found. Like the stuff that's hard work and tears you up in your mind and leaves you feeling really mentally tired, physically drained, is the stuff that you don't care about a lot of the time. So I try and kind of, I'm in the process actually now of trying to cleanse myself of the stuff that I don't have any passion for and just sticking with the stuff that I have most passion for. And the stuff we've talked about is that. Also, I love investing as well. I've got to be honest. Either investing in terms of my time to take equity or through financial. And especially in tech startups, I love it. And I was lucky. I met a guy called Saul Klein. Shout out Saul Klein, one of the best investors in Europe, if not the best at different levels, different stages. He had a thing that he'd done. And it was just at that point, that moment, then my previous wife died at the time. And I was kind of looking for something in my life to kind of just fill time.
Stay occupied.
Yeah, and keep your mind occupied. And I met this guy at a web summit where I was talking, actually. And he was there and he said, listen, come in on a Monday, we do like a Dragon's Den, like a Shark Tank type thing. Mm. Where we have people come and pitch us ideas and stuff, and we invest or we help them set up the business and try and amplify what they do. And I used to go, I went in there for about 18 months. I was going in there on and off, and I was just meeting new people. And this guy, man, his perspective on everything, life or business, was always just like, whoa, this guy's from a different planet. He's like an alien, man. Just sees things differently. Good heart, good energy. And then I've invested in a few things that we've done with him. I've invested with other people, but through him, I started to understand the space more. Yeah, some of them didn't do well, but the ones that do well are just crazy. So it's just been a great experience. And just to go into a new life, new world, meet new people, and just be part of creating new, like, wonderful businesses that kind of a change in certain industries, which is it's just crazy.
So it's the same format. You're getting into these tech companies in the early seed rounds with the aspiration of it going public one day.
And once or buyout.
Yeah.
And then obviously
you do well.
You do well.
Then stay drippy.
So the angel and VC world is interesting. Once again, a lot of guys in America, like Nas, He's heavy in that. Got in Coinbase, got in Ring, got in PillPack.
Yeah, he smashed it.
Yeah. He's had a hell of a run. So what you said you was educated, like what did you learn? What did you learn to help you actually have a better education? Because I don't think people still fully understand. Like they know angel investing, you invest in a company and they might have heard about seed rounds, but that's probably it. Like what did you learn to really have a good understanding? Okay, I know how this works
now. I think that you get so many ideas. So on a Monday, you might get 10 opportunities that present themselves. And when I was first going in, I was thinking, oh, every idea sounded amazing. Like, whoa, that's,
put it all.
Yeah, that's, oh my God. That's unbelievable. That's great. That's great. And then I quickly realized that it's not about the idea necessarily. It's about the people. Like, who's behind the idea? You're investing in that person to execute on that business. So like put the, what, because a lot of the best ones that I've invested in are boring. Like I would, they don't excite me, but the people behind it are trusting that person. I believe in that person. Actually, the idea is a good idea, but I believe he can actually pull through this and do what he's saying if he has the right resources around him. And so understanding that you can't get emotionally attached and caught up with like, it's a great idea. This is going to be brilliant. This is exciting. It looks sexy. And that's just got to go out the window. But it's hard to do that at the beginning. Do you know what I mean? Because you actually then start thinking, I'm an investor, man. This idea, I'm going to have to push this.
I'm invested in, bro.
You know what I mean? So, and if I talk to that guy to come in as well, and all of a sudden you realize, actually, the guy who's running that good idea is shit. Like, he ain't got a clue what he's doing. He don't know what he's saying, what he's doing. He's fucking up my money as well. So then you start becoming, actually, this is more business. No, take all that excitement out of it. And then once I started doing that, listen, you're still going to make mistakes. Listen, all the good ones we hear about, even Nas has invested in, I'm sure there's a load of them behind that have fouled, and he'll probably tell you that. But they're not publicized, so everyone thinks everything you do is a hit, where it's not. So It is a crazy business, but there's so many talented people out there. But the big thing for me, and we were talking about this before we came on, but it's just that I want to be part of something that gives people that come from our culture, our background, an opportunity to see this. Like, not at the last stage where there's no room for big margins. I wanted them to get it where actually you can get in early and see these future unicorn companies at a real early stage, if not seed fund the next stage. So that, because we don't get to see it, even us as athletes, we get to see it quite far down the line. It's only lucky that I'm kind of plugged into a few guys who are big in that industry and big in that market and know the game and want to help. But a lot of the time you come in and like, oh, actually, you know what, can you just endorse this for us? I don't want to endorse, man. I want equity, bro. Just give me some equity.
Pay me in equity.
Yeah, I'd be like, I want to give you X amount of power. No, bro, I would rather take everything in equity. Or you are, depends where you are in life. You might want to take half and half. But I don't want to really talk unless I get some equity. So, but it's about having an understanding and experience. And I think a lot of the young players, but it's changing more now because they're seeing shows like yours. They're seeing I Am Athlete, who talk about this type of stuff. Actually, it ain't all about. And that's where Jordan set the blueprint in that. Like, and Nike, from what I gather, they say it's one of the. It's a great deal, but it's a bad deal at the same time.
Yeah.
For them.
For what he brought to the table.
For the private jets he keeps buying. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's down to them.
Jordan Brand, he owns 30% of it. And the other 70 is Nike.
Yeah, well, I think that's why Yeezy's situation is so unique.
100%.
He owns 100% of the Yeezy brand, even though it's distributed
to Adidas.
By Adidas. Yeah. But, you know, it's I think every generation learns. You know what I'm saying? That's the benefit of it. And especially now with social media and people being vocal about it, it's like, it's not hidden. You can actually see the mistakes. Okay, this person made this mistake, so I know going forward, I can't make that mistake and I'll do it this way. But let's talk about the NFTs, because I know that that's something that you was passionate about as well. How do you feel about the NFT space? Because a lot of people feel like it's a bubble, it's going to crash. I don't necessarily feel like it's a bubble, but I kind of feel like it's very similar to the early .com or even crypto a few years ago, where it probably will come back down because there's a lot of projects that's not really worth anything, but the NFT space is here to stay. So what's your thoughts? Before I ask you specific questions, like, what's your thoughts on broad range, the NFT space right now? Because this is on fire right now.
Yeah, I think it's not going nowhere. I think like you say, the .com boom, everyone at the time was saying, nah, this is a myth. This is going to be here today, gone tomorrow. Like, it's going to, but I think NFTs will be here because it gives the creators, the artists power again. So that, I don't think that will be relinquished. It's just that I think probably 95, even more, 98% of the stuff that you see coming out today will probably be gone. And there'll be more blue chip the strong ones of today, I think, will stay and grow. Yeah. But there's a lot of shit. And you just gotta like distinguish what you believe is and back the right horse.
Yeah, that's why I say it's backing the right horse, right? Even though there's a dot com bubble, there was still an Amazon in there.
Yeah, exactly.
There was still a Yahoo in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? There was still an eBay in there.
Yahoo's a bad example.
Well, it's still here.
Google.
It's not excite.com, right? Yahoo's still here. Yeah. We can't knock it. It's not excite. We know that. And a bunch of others that we don't even see anymore. AOL. Like a bunch of those that we don't see anymore. So it's about just finding the right one. But who introduced you to it, or did this become something again that you just kind of found an interest in and said, let me study this because this is going to be a new wave?
I think like everybody else, I just was on social media, and then you go to links and you look at stuff, you research, you look at different industries that are taking it on. Is it Kings of Leon who done it with a song or an album?
Yep, they were one of the first artists.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden you see Nike are buying a lab, like, and it's just like Adidas are now going in the space. I think Gucci are negotiating or something. You just see, it's like snowballing. You think, how can I not get interested in this? And then opportunities start presenting themselves, and you think, let me have a little look, see what's going on, and that done okay, that was okay. And I just don't think it's a space that's going to go anywhere. And I think I think regulations might change around it a little bit and kind of tighten things up to a certain extent, but I don't see it being something that can be deleted. I think there's too much power for the creators and the musicians and different people that mean something that can actually benefit from this for it to be able to go anywhere.
Do you have an NFT?
Yeah, I've got a couple of NFTs. I've got, you know what, it's more about, like, I got involved in a company called So Rare, which is basically an NFT company, which is basically like in America, what is it? Top Shot.
Yeah.
So it's like that, but for soccer. And as soon as I heard the idea, I just said, whoa. Like, you can trade players, you can buy a part of a player that you feel like you could start at this level, but you're backing that he's going to grow, and all of a sudden you get the growth, and like, it's... I didn't completely understand it, but I believed in the team behind it and these guys and the influence of the guy I mentioned, Saul, before. He said, Rio, I'm grinding this as well. And I was like, you know what? I've got to go as well. Right. And the company's gone from like, I think, late hundreds to 200s. Now it's like, company's doing well, man. It's doing well.
So is it similar in the sense of Top Shot where it's highlights of the players and then you can have ownership of the highlights, or... Something a little different for
it's more. It's more. It's just actual player. Yeah. It's like a picture of the player, and that's it. But that's something that will be introduced at some point, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of regulations, especially with football, with the rights of the
club team.
Yeah, like the Premier League will own the rights for. They sell the rights, obviously, to like the big companies that like we have, BT and Sky Sports here and Amazon. So the actual highlight reels and stuff like that. It's quite a complex situation. Yeah. So. The NBA and the NFL do it very different, quite differently, I think.
Wild West a little bit.
A few sports questions. Well, first, so being in America, we don't really have a full grasp of what goes on overseas. We just see, like, we just hear reports and we just see things. One thing that was very disturbing that we were seeing, and it's kind of an ongoing thing in different countries throughout Europe, is the racism at football games or matches. You played, obviously, for a very long time at the highest level. What's your thoughts on that, and how is it as bad as it looks? Because it looked like, what was the brother? I think it was in France.
Drogba?
Like
Balotelli, maybe.
Balotelli. Yeah.
And then I think even Jay-Z was going to invest. Well, he was going to invest in a team out here. But then he pulled back when he did some more research. So long story short, how is it?
Racism here, man. Like, I'm actually shooting a documentary about it at the moment, so which is going to be real good. And it will be very insightful, especially like for guys overseas like yourselves to kind of understand the culture here. Very different. It's toxic. Social media plays a big part in that, in facilitating and escalating racists and that ignorant behavior, but discrimination of all forms, really. I think a good case is the three England players who were black guys, Rashford, Sancho and Saka. National team. The three young English players, young English boys, all black, missed a penalty. And the mad thing about it is that the majority of the people in the stands in that day in the stadium or at home watching, before they even stepped up to take the penalties, all were saying to themselves, they've either said it to someone who was with them or they thought, if they miss, man, they're going to get abused.
I watched it and said it.
Yeah, these guys miss, they're going to get racially abused. Yeah. And it played out like that. So it was no surprise when it happened. It's terrible. It's disgusting to think that today we're still seeing this stuff and still having to argue and fight. Because it's tiring, man, having to answer these questions on race all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been going on for so many years. When I was a kid, it was going on. It's getting worse now because of social media and the ability to really touch people and get to people direct.
Yeah.
So it's a nightmare, really. But I don't think the powers that be, the stakeholders in our game, at least, do enough. I'll be interested to hear what you guys say about that. Like, we look at the NBA, but I love watching the NBA, mm-hmm. and the way that the players in the NBA kind of came together and they sat out a game, yeah, a weekend, mm-hmm. One of the games. Mm-hmm. That's never happened here. That would never happen here right now. Should it happen? I think so. At some point, if stuff continues the way it continues going, can it happen? I don't know, because the way that the NBA seems, correct me if I'm wrong, it just seems like a more of a tight-knitted players union, players group.
They have more power.
They have power, yeah. And they utilize that power in positive ways, right, to get some sort of change or shift in mindset or regulations and in the system. But here it's not as tight knit. It's not, and it's just finding a way of helping that. And I'm going to LA actually soon, to hopefully meet some NBA players or some decision makers, just to find out a bit more detail in how they do that, to bring that kind of information back, to kind of say, like, this is potentially, I don't know, it's so, that's what we were talking about before. It's funny, like, in America shit happens. And like England, we follow. In the UK and Europe, we follow probably 3, 4, 5 years, sometimes 10 years later. Because you guys have, I don't know why, it just in a lot of the stuff that just happens, and it's the way. And I feel I'm not saying you guys have got the racism issue down or you've got it perfect, but there's certain things that you guys have done that I feel where we could learn from.
Yeah, I think the NBA has done a great job with the players having like real control. The NFL still not really there. And that's why, even with that kneeling situation with Colin Kaepernick, and the owners still have a lot more control in the NFL. But the NBA, it's more of a...
It's a players' league.
Yeah, it's more of a players' league.
Yeah.
And it's been that way for a long time.
Yeah.
Even in the CBA, where they got like 51% of the revenue. Like, they get more of the revenue than the owners.
They just negotiated that, yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. It was like 55-45.
Yeah.
Wow.
So maybe you can learn the dynamics of that and see how the players. It's very interesting because you can see like which leagues have the power. Mm-hmm. Like you can see the stark contrast between the NBA and the NFL from a lot of stuff that happens that the NFL would never let happen.
The Premier League don't get no power. Players ain't got no power.
Yeah, it's like that is like the
shit. You get paid to play
and that's it.
And be quiet. That's it. Like,
so when the young gentleman, because everything you're saying is 100% true. As I'm watching this, I'm like, these guys got subbed in to do the kicks, and I'm like, I hope they make it. For their sake, I hope they make it. Mm. But when they didn't, and there was turmoil from everything that was going around them, is this where you step in as a senior statesman to the national team and say, I need to go talk to these guys?
Yeah, you reach out, man. You reach out. And like, I know a couple of the guys that look after these boys too as well, and you speak, and it's like, it's difficult for them, man, because... It can be a lonely place, as much as they've got huge followings on social media.
And they're the future of the national team.
They're the future of football in this country. Right. And it's like, 1 minute before that, they were cheering these guys. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden now, there's the hate that's being spilled on these guys. It's just like, you just can't believe how it can go from one way situation to another that quick. But yeah, and I think it's about championing these boys. Like, you can speak up, you can miss a penalty, it's fine. Still walk with your head high because you're doing something that no one really gets a chance to do, and you've done really well to get where you are. You guys are champions, really.
Mm-hmm.
So just continue, and I think it's about just reinforcing that to these guys. But it's difficult, yeah. And I think that the powers that be the stakeholders in the game need to make people on social media or the social media companies accountable for really leaving the players in a position where their mental health is really at stake when you get these type of situations.
No, it's an extremely difficult situation to play on. I mean, because it's like the thing that shocked us is not the racism part, because America is built on racism. So we're used to that, but just the vocalness of it. Like, you'll never see...
Bro, a man's not coming up to your face, yeah, and going to, right, boom, black this, black that.
Yeah, that's what I'm
saying. But on social media, the energy's like, almost like, I could say what I want. Well, it is. I can say what I want because there's going to be no repercussions. There's going to be no... I'm not going to jail. No one's going to come and get me. No, there's no police going to come to my door.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I can say what I want.
Yeah.
I don't know how it can be like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully, you know, I don't know how you change it, but it is something that, like I said, just from an observer, it's just disturbing. Like, even in the fan, like, to see, like, fans chanting racial slurs, like, you'll never see that in the States. Like, mm-hmm. You'll never see, like, people throwing bananas on the field. Like,
it's been going on for years. Like, so it hasn't changed, obviously. Like, it went quiet for a while, but then all of a sudden a few racist situations pop up and you're like, whoa, actually, it was just swept under the carpet because it's there.
Speaking of sports, switching topics, how do you feel about the metaverse? Because I personally feel like, have you ever tried the Oculus for Facebook?
Yeah.
You tried it?
Mm.
What's your experience? You like it?
It takes some getting used to, man.
I feel like sports like boxing, basketball, probably even football as well. I feel like that's the future of metaverse. Like, if you could put Oculus glasses on and be like right there in the action, like, to me as a sports fan, I would pay for that. So I'm interested because, like, in the States, the NBA is moving heavy into the metaverse. Like, they just did something on All-Star Weekend where the commissioner was talking to a hologram.
Yeah.
And the Brooklyn Nets was the first NBA team to broadcast games in the metaverse. So
Netaverse.
Wow.
Yeah, they call it the Netaverse.
They're
actively moving into that. I don't know if that's happening here.
Not yet.
But how do you feel about that?
Listen, I think that the landscape changes so quick in tech, and I just think that's something that is definitely coming. Like I said before, you see so many of these big companies that are already invested in the metaverse, that they're up buying space, they're already saying we're going to be coming in that space right now. So I think it's a matter of time. I think the media companies, like in this country, like BT, like Sky, like Amazon, I know there's going to be plans to be going into that area. Football clubs, I definitely see it, but I think by tradition, football clubs are very, very skeptical of new things.
Old school.
And they'll wait to see the Brooklyn Nets, the NFL, the NBA trial and error, and then go in after that. I think I don't see it happening like immediate. But that's just because of the culture that's here. Because football's quite an old school. It's got old school traits, and a lot of people really cling on to that. And it's part of what makes football special as well. So to bring new elements to the game, like, we've only just got VAR and replays to help with refereeing decisions. Like, in the NFL, how long have you been doing that?
Yeah,
long time. Long time.
Over 20 years.
Exactly. Like, we're probably 20, 25 years behind in that sense. That is tech, essentially. So I feel we'll be definitely coming up behind you guys at some point.
Mm. Well, one of the things that you talked about in the media companies that you're shooting the documentaries, but I think what kind of gets overlooked is that you actually have autobiographies, these book deals. Was that something that you, in your mind, you knew you wanted to get your story out through that format, or was somebody like, hey, this would be good for you as well?
Yeah, I think it's also about controlling your narrative as well, because I think a lot of things are said about players and athletes over the years that, like, are they really true? A lot of them aren't true. And being able to control that, I think with book deals, I think it's because a lot of books do get written about certain players, but a lot of the time the player hasn't actually agreed to it and been a part of the process. So to be able to control that and be a part of that is, I think, important for players if the desire and want is out there for you to write a book. But also, like with the documentaries that I've done that are about my life and about certain aspects of my life, a lot of it is to help other people. Like what I went through with my wife and my mum in quick succession, both passing away. my previous wife, talking about that as a man, and kind of people always look at that masculine, that machoism that comes with men. Sometimes you have to be vulnerable at times and showing emotion at times. I think there's a lot of people out there that are probably unaware of as to how that can benefit you when you're going through really bad and down times. And I think just showcasing that on a documentary for people to see it and visualize it, I think can be powerful and can change people's kind of fortunes a lot of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Mental health, extremely important. Extremely important, especially for men, especially for black men. For sure.
We're taught not to talk, man. Isn't it?
Yeah.
About feelings.
Not cool.
Yeah. Music. I understand you're a big music enthusiast too, huh?
Yeah, I love music, man. I love music. I was just playing some Big L, actually.
Oh, yeah.
I just introduced one of the guys. So he's like, I don't know this guy.
That man knows him things. Man, Big L. Man, know them things.
Big L's a legend. So, what's your vibe? Because I've been getting educated on music in the UK, and I already know like the drill music is heavy right now. And then drill music is heavy in New York and its influence. But then he was telling me that there's a music that predates drill music.
Grime scene. Yeah,
the grime scene. And then of course we know about scat. That we know about gigs. We know
Dave.
The national anthem.
Dave. Yeah. We're going to find Dave.
Yeah. And what's my guy now?
Central English. C.
Central C, yeah, the Central young guy.
Back to it. Yo, we've been here for a week, man. I feel like I'm...
You guys are in the culture, man.
Right back to it. So, yeah, so what's the vibe in London, like, as far as... What's your musical taste that you grew up on, and what's happening now that you like?
What I grew up on was, like... Like my dad was big music. Like he used to have vinyl. I got it along one wall in the house. So when he used to go out, I used to just put, like, if he ever found out if I was a kid, I'd have known about it. But when he used to go out, I used to sneak in and just put like the vinyl, like Marvin Gaye and stuff like that.
Old school
Barry White and stuff. And then Temptations. And then as I got older, I was just like, I loved R&B, New Jack Swing, hip hop. I loved that as a kid. Like Nas, I used to love Nas when I was young.
That's my
I used to love him, man. Nas, but then like all Jodeci, that type of H-Town and stuff like that. Like, you know, the moments you need in your life. The moments.
Yeah. I will cry for you.
Forever My Lady and all them shit. H-Town. So like all that type of stuff. Jagged Edge.
H-Town forever. Body rocking, knocking double.
Yeah, exactly. all them type, that was like, I said, Donnell Jones. Like he actually sung at my birthday when I was younger.
Donnell, yeah.
He was cool.
Classic.
So all that type of stuff. And then obviously as you get, like reggae has been a huge influence on my life. Like ragga, reggae, like Buju Banton, Bounty Killer, Sizzler, all like, I love, that's my probably go-to. Garnet Silk, people like that. But then you got in England, that's the thing. There was like jungle, house, grime. And then it's like, obviously now you got drill. But the grime stuff was like when I was younger and I was out and I was about it, like with, like, you know, I don't know if you know, like Kano, Dizzy Rascal, Skepta, Jeremy, all them boys were coming out. Like you were now like, they're like, part of the culture, deep in the culture, and set the standard and set everything for the young guys now to come, and they're just like, they've just killed it. All these young drill rappers and all these other artists now who are doing hip hop and rap, they're actually making proper money. Whereas the guys before in their early days, it was difficult for them to make money, and the system wouldn't really allow it. It wasn't as accepting. You look at the charts now, Afrobeats even. You heard some Afrobeats?
Yeah. He was in Nigeria. We interviewed Davidoff.
Oh, wicked, yeah, nice guy.
In Lagos,
yeah. He's a Man United fan. Yeah. Good guy.
You know,
yeah.
I drove past Chelsea the other day, took a picture, and he was in my DMs like, wrong team.
Arsenal.
Yeah. Davido knows, he knows.
That might be wrong team too, though.
No, that's the...
That's the man you got.
Yeah. No, it's good. But no, like, all that type of music I love, like, and... I just love music in general. It's like, I'm not too like, oh, I only listen to this music and I hate that type of music. I just love good music. And hip hop like is a massive, especially the older hip hop. I'm more like, I like a lot of the new stuff, but 90s and early 2000s.
We grew up in the same time.
Yeah. So, Big E, like Big L.
Big L.
right.
Play this to these young guys who don't understand, man. They don't get the same vibes.
we're gonna take them through a journey through New York real quick. I got to do this from a sports standpoint, because in America, probably two of the three most famous people that we knew was David Beckham and obviously Cristiano Ronaldo. Mm-hmm. You've been around both.
Mm.
What has that been like, watching like that level of, like, I guess, I don't even know what the
celebrity.
Problem is.
Do you know a mad thing? I'm not like dropping names here. Yeah, I went to a, David Beckham, whenever you turned up anywhere with Bex, it was like the Beatles would turn up. It was just a crazy experience. The hysteria that follows that guy is just mad. Like, he'll turn a whole room upside down. From the chicks to the old men to the kids, they're all going upside down to get near and get a picture of him. And you know what? It's mad, because I should just sometimes step back. Like, I remember I was at a fashion show in Paris once, and Usher was there, and I'd done some stuff with Usher years ago. He was there, and we were talking, and Bex was there doing his thing, and obviously loads of people was around him going crazy. And he went to me, Don't you get involved and stuff like that? That's what Usher said to me. I said, bro, you got to let him do what he's going to do, man. I don't want to get caught up in all that stuff. It's that crazy. Like, and he's at a fashion show with A-listers everywhere, and they're going nuts. And he retired years ago. It's crazy. And then you've got Cristiano Ronaldo, who is just like, another one's like, he flipped the game on his head in terms of like, numbers now, like numbers on Instagram, and everyone looks at who's the biggest on Instagram, and probably everyone in America would never really know that he's the biggest guy on Instagram.
We were just having this conversation yesterday, and we were saying that one of our friends said that anywhere he goes in the world, people's gonna know who he is. No. And I'm like, nah, not really, because a lot of people in America not really
watch football. Yeah.
Like, anywhere outside of America he goes in the world, everyone will know him. I don't think there's a place he goes in the world outside of America. Listen, there's going to be states in America that people know him. And listen, when he turns up, there will be everywhere he will go, someone will know him.
Yeah.
But the hysteria, if you were saying who gets more craziness around him, I'd say Cristiano.
Wow.
Like, you were saying him versus LeBron. And I'm saying, look,
anywhere outside of America, Cristiano, easy.
He's different.
Easy.
He's different.
Like, you know, the American sports stars, like, they are fucking huge. They are.
Yeah.
It's like, it's crazy. And you look at it, and the amount of money the ones nowadays are making, even years ago, but the amount of money they're making. And for all of that, outside of America, they can't compete with the top five, top 10 football players in the world.
Yeah.
In terms of eyeballs and seeing and hysteria, it's very different.
That's what I said. Even like from an Instagram standpoint, it's not even close,
bro. Neymar, Messi,
out of here.
Mbappe
and the money.
Pogba,
Mbappe is my guy.
Well, yeah. money.
Well, Cristiano. I mean,
Floyd.
He might be past them now.
Floyd,
the billionaire boys club. Yeah, they're the billionaire boys club. Messi's right there. He's on it.
Yeah, Floyd was number one for like.
He got to it. Yeah. Well, Tiger, Michael and Tiger, Braun, Cristiano, Messi, they right there. And Neymar gonna be next.
I think the difference is the endorsement deals in America are different.
Right.
They're crazy. Like,
but yeah, they get these large, like the Nike contract.
Yeah, they're crazy.
The Adidas for Messi is crazy.
Before we wrap, I have this question, because I took a liking to Neymar, and I was following his career. And I remember when he signed some deal, it was crazy. And they had to pay like 20 million euros. Well,
the transfer fees.
Transfer fee. What is the what's that? Can you explain that?
So like in England, say a player signs a five-year deal. Anytime in that 5 years, a club can approach the club who owns the player and say, we want that player. And the club who owns that player will say, okay, if you want him, we value him at £100 million. If you want him, you can buy him. And then you take his contract, you renegotiate his personal contract, but you've got to pay £100 million and you get to take the player.
To the club.
You paid £100 million from club to club.
Mm-hmm.
Then the player then negotiates his contract. Whereas you can't do that in American sports.
No, you get traded.
You get traded
or you got to wait for your contract.
But there's no transfer fee. Whereas in football, where there's a fee, every player has a value. So Mbappe now, if he's going for a free transfer.
Sure.
So he's at the end of his contract. Say he might have signed a 5-year deal. He's now got his contract down to, at the end of this season, will be zero. No years on it. So there's no transfer fee. So you imagine what wages he'll be asking for. He'll be saying, I'm worth £250 million as a player, as a one-off fee. Forget my wages. I need to see some of that £250 million because I'm saving you that by going to a zero on my contract in length, in time.
I think what Messi's contract was, it was rumored to be like $660 million.
Yeah, his contract was crazy, man. Serious.
$660 million. So like,
that's before endorsements.
Right. Just the contract to play.
Crackers. I played in the wrong era, man. I played in the wrong era. Do you know what? I used to have this conversation with one of my partners in football, me and Nemanja Vidic. Any football fans out there, you'll know who he is. And we sit there, and I sit there and go to him, bro, we got in at the best time. We earned the most money. Oh my God, the guys from 5 years ago, 10 years ago, they're looking at us like crazy. And he used to go, yeah, you think we are? I said, yeah, you ain't going higher than this, bro.
600 million.
These guys have cleaned up different, but it's good. Good luck to them.
We had this conversation the other day. We were saying, like, Mbappe, such a great player, such a young talent. Every year, it seems like there's some type of transfer that's about to happen with him. Hmm. Why is that? When he's playing for PSG with two other all-time greats, what's the science behind that? Is he wants to be a star of his own situation, or like how does that work? What's the psychology behind that?
I think it's because he's been there for about 4 or 5 years, mm-hmm. and he's like, what more can I do here? I need a new challenge. Mm-hmm. I think also for Mbappe, I think it might be about like culture as well, like to be considered the best in the world. Just imagine, he's got to share the spotlight with two superstars.
That are bigger than him.
Yeah, at the moment. But in terms of playing, who's playing the best football, Mbappe, you could argue, say it's him.
It's him, yeah.
But in terms of superstardom, he's probably third on the rung because of the time he's been in the game compared to these guys. So he just may, also that league isn't considered the best league that he plays in.
Got to come here.
Or come to the Premier League. La Liga have two big clubs, Barcelona and Real Madrid. Right, and everyone's saying Madrid that he's going to go there. But historically, they're huge clubs. So they still have huge pool. It's like in America, you guys, what would be the NBA team that everyone goes down?
The Lakers.
You got to go and play for, if you get a chance to play for the Lakers. If
you got to do it.
And that's what it's like when you look at, so PSG's a very new team.
Yeah, and they always get a guy. So like, they had Kobe, rest in peace, and then they got Bron. So they lost, obviously Cristiano Ronaldo left to go to Italy. So now Mbappe will take that torch.
Yeah, and then Haaland as well. Don't forget Haaland. He's another big talent. He's coming from Dortmund, and I think he'll probably go to Barcelona. Mm. Maybe, unless he comes to the Premier League. But
lost Messi.
So it's crazy. It's similar.
Yeah.
Speaking of Messi, this is an age-long debate. Ronaldo, Messi, who is the best?
Let's add to it. Are you going to say all time?
Yeah. Like, who's better? Career.
Are we putting Pele in this conversation?
Well, no. I'm not going to say. That's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, yeah.
Pele.
We said all time.
Well, he's the great. He's like...
It's difficult though to say who's. You know why? Because look at the amount we see of these two guys. We see their whole catalog, but with Pele, what do we see? We don't have that history to be able to go, oh, we only saw the World Cup really, mm-hmm. when he played every day. So the World Cup came around every 4 years. We only saw him really every 4 years. Mm-hmm. So to judge him just on that, I think is like, I almost have to put him to one side and say, yeah, he's a great, maybe the greatest of all time, but I wouldn't put him against these guys because I don't know enough. Mm. These two, in this era, there's no one near. The numbers that these two have done, the consistency sustained over a long period of time, never been seen before. Never, ever. It's just, it's outrageous.
And at the same time,
it's like in tennis when you had like, I don't know, Federer and Nadal.
And now Djokovic.
Like, you really got that in football. You had like Maradona was the man. Yeah. Pele was the man, but different eras. Now we had two of them fighting against each other from afar. It was just a beautiful story.
Yeah.
Who's the best? I like to put it, I don't know, man.
Diplomatic. I got it.
Do you know what?
He's a man you got.
No, you know what?
So we got to be careful.
Messi is the artists of artists. Like what he does on a pitch, providing chances for other people, scoring beautiful goals, almost like just painting pictures around the pitch. He was just mesmeric to watch. He just was like, this guy is from a different outer space. Mm-hmm. Cristiano is the most decisive footballer I've ever seen.
Size, talent, speed.
Just all he decides games. And you look through his career, the biggest moments, this guy just steps up and just scores. And like, they're both great. And it's almost like, let's just enjoy them. Don't matter who's the best. Just enjoy them. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But because it's that close as well for me.
And he's back here.
He's back in Manchester. They're not having a good time, man. They're not having a good time, but like, he's back.
But he's back.
Yeah.
Most important, where he started.
Well, yeah, it's been a pleasure, my brother.
Nice to meet you, man.
Thank you.
Again, I'm a fan of the show, man. So
appreciate it. Thank you for the hospitality. Yeah, anything you want to tell the people before we wrap? Any projects you're working on, anything?
No, you know what? I've got a sick project coming out soon. And we've actually got a crowdfund that you guys might want to be interested in at some point. But it's called We Are 8. Go on the App Store. We Are 8. Go on the App Store and search it out. It's an unbelievable platform, social platform, where there's no hate, no toxicity. Helps the environment. But also what the most important thing, well, one of the most important things it does alongside that is that it economically empowers people. You watch an advert, you get paid.
Mm.
And that's something that I've never seen before, never gets done. I could never give back to my fans or people that have championed me on social media. That's enabled me to go and get big deals with other commercial brands. Now I've got a viable, sustainable way of giving back to the people that have championed me. As long as they download that platform, download the app, they can get paid to watch an advert 2 minutes a day.
Dope.
Sick. Also, by the way, don't forget where we are. We are at Vive, 555, Vibe with Five. Check it out on YouTube. We do it every week, every Monday, 5 p.m. UK time. Do not miss it. You want to know about football? You want to get educated on football? Vibe with Five.
I got to make it to a bit.
Vibe with Five. And I am still a free agent from who I'm going to root for. But I'm leaning towards Manchester United.
Yeah, that's what we always need more fans, more hundreds of millions that we've got already. We need new ones from over the pond. It's nice.
There you have it. There you have it. Like, I think the deal has been signed.
I'm choosing by country.
The deal has been signed.
I'm gonna go PSG.
Put my man
Messi's there, and I'll go.
Me and Drake. I'm bringing Drake back.
Is Drake a real? Is he a real?
We're gonna get him. We're gonna get him back.
Is he on the show? You had him on?
Not yet.
Have you reached out to him?
Somebody got to reach out to Future the Prince. That's how you got to go through the channels.
Soon come. I feel like Drake will soon come.
Yeah. Okay, good.
No chit chat ting. Better talk nice.
Yeah. Troy, last words?
Yo, shout out to everybody that is a earner, man. I can't say it enough, man. The love that we've gotten here in the UK just shows us that this is a global impact, and we couldn't be more humbled by it. So thank you for your continued support. We're going to keep delivering because we know that the mission is super important, and we take it very, 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 very serious. So shout out to y'all, and shout out to everybody that supports the merch, Access Over Liabilities. You know, that's the slogan, but we live by that. So shout out to y'all that support, and shout out to our team and our families that are out here with us enjoying this UK run. It's been incredible.
Yeah, shout out to London. And if you don't see us in the States, that means man's gone clear.
Man's gone clear.
They're on an island somewhere.
Yo.
We're going to be in Europe, running through Europe.
Man's gone clear.
A whole Euro
real.
Tour, man. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
A mic drop. Backdrop.
Backdrop.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.